Hello, and welcome to A Tale of Two Game Devs, a podcast about two friends who aren't video game industry veterans.
But want to be.
That voice you just heard was that of my good friend, the fancy Mikeless Milo.
I always love these adjectives. And that other lovely voice will be up against three more weeks of academic intensity than I will, my dear friend Michaela.
Well, to be totally fair, you started school the semester before I did, so it evens out, I think, probably, maybe. And at the very least, your semester is just so intense.
Yeah, there's crazy stuff here sometimes, and there. Yeah. Just crazy stuff everywhere.
Yeah, you know, keeping up with life is a struggle, but alas, it is our lot.
Yeah, we're just walking into a gigantic cyclone of craziness. It's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
We call that cyclone life.
Yes. Let it wash over you. Let it wash over you. Ah.
Right.
just a quick
put your head back and feel the wind. Anyway, yeah.
A quick aside for our listeners here. My school year is wrapping up, and so my fancy microphone has actually been sent back home in preparation for move out. So I'll be chatting on my microphone built into my MacBook, and I have no idea what the quality of that is like. So this will be a bit of an adventure.
It's not that bad. Like, for me listening to it, it's noticeably not as good as your other one, but it's not terrible.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So wait, what are your summer plans before? Because I know before on the podcast, you had talked about doing all sorts of things. So what are your plans?
Yeah. So right now, I don't remember where I left off on the podcast. What did I mention on the podcast?
About your summer plans?
Yeah, I don't recall.
I think you had talked about potentially taking classes over the summer and like being an RA at DigiPen.
Oh man, so many different things. Okay, did I mention I was considering dropping out of DigiPen at one point?
No, you didn't mention that.
Oh man, that's been crazy. Okay.
Yeah, you'll just have to give us the whole story.
Yeah, all right. So let's jump into our first segment here with some catch up on my end.
Yeah.
So it's been a few weeks now where I've been considering this, but about halfway through the semester, I hit a point. I burned out. So end of first semester, I burned out about the last week of classes, which is, you know, that's fine. I had an entire month to recover and then get back into it. However, this semester, I burned out halfway through, which means it's like, oh, there's still an entire half semester here, and I don't want to touch design. I want nothing to do with design. Don't make me develop games ever again, which is, it's a really interesting place to be in because there's, when I hit burnout, there's just no, I don't want to do any of the game development, game design stuff. And also, I still can feel that I really enjoy it. It's really odd to not at all want to touch a thing that you love. So that's been a thing throughout the semester, but I've also had tendonitis in my wrists for most of the semester. And when I went home for spring break, I had a chance to just rest, and I used a computer no more than 1 to 4 hours per day, and I felt amazing. Mm-hmm. It felt so good. And following that, right, I instated this rule, even though I'm at school. So I've got a doctor's note, and I've been working with the disability services at my school to make this possible, but I've essentially set up my curriculum through the end of the year so that I don't have to do a whole lot of computer work, which gives my wrists that chance to heal. However, even with all that, with Rainbow Bobo, which is one of my dream projects, it was like, I don't want to touch this. I'm in pain. I'm burnt out. I have no will to touch this. Don't make me touch this. So when I hit that point, it was like, well, do I really want to be here? Because the DigiPen is built to make you burn out, which is unfortunate, and also powered by a larger issue, which is the industry is run in such a way that it burns people out. And DigiPen's sole
and we
mission
talked about
is
this
to
a
get
lot
you
on
ready
the last
for that
episode.
Industry. Sorry, I missed that.
I just said we talked about this a lot on the last episode.
Yeah. Anyway, so I was feeling all that burnout, and I was feeling like there was a lot of class work and stuff that didn't feel particularly pertinent to the things that I really want to learn. And I've mentioned I have a huge fascination in bringing story and gameplay together, and in all the projects that I make, I'm trying to find exactly how to do that, because it's a passion of mine, and two, I have it, like, it's on the tip of my tongue, but I haven't quite figured it out yet, and so the only way I'm going to figure that out is as I keep talking and refining and iterating and playing. But when my classwork doesn't support that, and when my classwork feels like it doesn't support why I make games in the first place, which is to remind people of the joyous mystery of living, of being here, and the very quiet miracle that is, it feels meaningless. And when I have to do so much work to do stuff that feels meaningless, I just find that soul crushing. Now, I was considering dropping out of DigiPen. However, a rather miraculous thing happened where I was chatting with two of my design instructors who I'm very, very fond of about this. And one of them told me to come chat with them about other options. And what we came to essentially is you don't need a degree in the games industry to get a job. That's not what they're looking for. They're looking for what can you do? that's pretty much what matters in this industry. And so what we came to is, okay, well, what kind of classes do you want to be taking? And so I went through the entire DigiPen catalog and so handpicked all of the classes that are relevant to the things that are fascinating to me and that are relevant to the world that I want to help create, to remind people of. And so semester by semester, sort of played by ear, I'm just going to be picking from those classes. I would completely forgo the degree and take less courses. So it'll be 12 to 13 credits instead of 18. And I'll be doing that semester to semester for the next 3 years. And by the time I graduate, I'll still have wicked portfolio pieces to show and a resume that says, here, look, I've worked on teams. I've built these games. I've got, you know, all these different skills and qualifications. I can work in these engines, what have you. So it's sort of just this like perfect solution that just came out of nowhere. I was very, very grateful for that opportunity.
So I guess my question here is, if you're not going to be getting a DigiPen degree, will you technically still be graduating, I guess? At least in the literal sense?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea how long like you'll be taking classes there for? It kind of sounds like you'll just plan on playing it by year.
Yeah, I'm going to do a full 4 years, but it's not going to be enough to qualify for a degree, and it's not all going to be courses that are part of what I need to have taken to get the degree here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm very excited because that means I can really start to hone in on those things. It feels much more in alignment with what I want to do. And also it's not going to be as intensive because again, 12 to 13 credits, which at a normal institution, 12 to 13 DigiPen credits is like 16 to 18 normal credits.
Right. So but you'll still be working quite a bit, just not like a death march.
Right. I'm hoping that it'll be relaxed enough where I don't burn out on a bajillion different work pieces.
Okay. And yeah, I mean, it sounds like if you're doing what you're way more passionate about, you're going to have more energy for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And then finally, I just wanted to top off my end of our catch-up segment with there's a really interesting opportunity called Girls Make Games, which I really want to go help with. Where have you heard of this, Michaela?
I don't think so. I mean, I feel like this is something I should have heard of. Is this something I can do?
Like, I believe I'm it curious. Is. Yeah. I'll send you the link. But Girls Make Games is a summer camp run by, or at least sponsored by, major tech industry companies. So Xbox, Google, Microsoft, wait, Xbox is Microsoft, Nintendo, Sony, mm-hmm. Ubisoft, Unity. This is like, it's just so many big names sponsor this summer camp. And it's young girls and young women ages like 12 to 18, I believe, come together for 3 weeks and build games and learn about game development. And the whole outreach is to start giving these people in the tech industry who are underrepresented a voice and a little opportunity to just break into that, because Lord needs, we need more diversity in the tech industry.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, they need camp counselors, right? They need people that essentially act as producers and work with these people to build these experiences. And you don't have to be a girl to be one of these camp counselors.
That was going to be one of my questions.
Yes, but they take both men and women, and these people work with the summer camp attendants to build games, both solo projects and team projects. We essentially act as producers, right? Which is right up my alley, the kind of thing I love, team leadership and producing. Right. And they'll probably be handling creative direction. That's fine. I just get to help it's support fair. their stuff.
You know, if it's going to be their voice, you probably want them to lead creatively, and you can help them realize it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I wouldn't want to lead them creatively in this case. It's not what I'd be here to do. But one, it's just super cool that that exists. Two, it's really, really fun that it was one of my professors that said, I want you to go apply for this. Use me as a recommendation. And one, I was stunned by that. And two, it's just like the perfect little thing. It's like, I cannot imagine a more perfect thing for my summer. And this is why.
Yeah.
It's not just a cool opportunity. It's a really cool opportunity. But two, it's one in games, which is also great. Three, it's one I'm qualified for. Four, it supports my mission of reminding people of that joy and of service and of helping people.
But yeah, that sounds awesome.
Even more miraculously, my arms are essentially useless right now, which eliminates the possibility for me to do many, many, many jobs over the summer. But not this one. This is like one of those rare jobs where I could still do this even with arms that are healing.
So well, it was, I mean, just gosh, like, fingers crossed. I hope you get it.
Thank you. Yeah, I haven't applied. I needed to go build my portfolio, which I'll talk about, because I needed something to be like, here's what I can do. Here's why I'd be a good fit. And I just didn't have that.
Yeah.
I'd done the work, but I didn't have any showcase for it. Now, I'll be applying for that. And again, I'll send you the link for this, because I think this would be right up your alley as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of busy this summer, but it does sound really cool.
Right. Because you've got your own.
I have an internship.
Going. That's right. How cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so that's my catch-up.
Is it out in Washington?
They're all over the place. They've got California. Oh. They've got Washington. I believe they had someplace in Utah. They had like six other places. It's all over the United States.
Okay, gotcha. So, like, if you were going to work there, I imagine you'd do they, like, run several over the summer so that it's, like, you have one three-week cohort, then another?
I believe the way that it works is that you sign up for one three-week cohort and do that, and then you're done. So, I'll
like,
be signing...
Okay, so
I'll
you'll
be...
only work for a part of it?
I don't know if it happens concurrently or not, but I mean, I'll work in one of the locations and I'll work the whole duration of that location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because I'm like, that doesn't sound like I know summer internships are usually like 12 weeks and that takes like the whole summer minus like 2 weeks or something. And so I'm like, well, if it's just a 3 week gig, I mean, maybe there's like 1 week of prep you have to be there for, but.
Yeah, I don't know. That specific detail is not detailed.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, like I said, I suppose you'll find out.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, so here's hoping. That's an amazing opportunity. I'll follow it as best I can, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, I hope you get it. That sounds awesome. And that totally sounds like something you would really love. So fingers crossed.
And how about you, my friend? What have you been up to?
Yeah, what have I been up to? Let me think back on the last week, what I've been doing. I mean, I finished up that one big animation and planning assignment at the end of last week. So I didn't have any big coding projects to work on for this week. I haven't been working that much this week. I've just been kind of I've been relaxing more. I've been taking it more slowly, and I've been kind of reading more and doing more research about different kinds of game dev stuff. I'll probably talk about that a little bit when we get into dev thoughts, because I haven't been actually developing anything. So I don't have any concrete work to talk about in dev thoughts, but, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I got my hair cut on Wednesday. That was nice, but nice. I don't think that's the most important to talk about.
You said you were doing some reading on game development?
Yeah, and I said I'll probably talk about that in Dev Thoughts.
Oh, whoops. I'm just so excited.
No, I get that. Well, I'll mention it there. And probably this thing that I found that was pretty cool. But I guess in general, I've just been taking it easier this last week, because I haven't fully burnt out, I guess, and in the way that you have, but this last academic year has probably been the most stressful, or at least one of the most stressful in my life. When you combine my transition and all the nerves prepping for GDC and coming out to people, and especially with my family, and having done a lot of that recently, and just a whole lot of interpersonal drama between me and my friends, and them coping with their own issues and having to be supportive. And at one point there was a room that flooded in our house that we had to fully evacuate, and oh, that was a big mess. So I don't know. It's just, I have been, thankfully, I've been able to kind of slow down a bit on the academic side and just sort of breathe a bit more, because I certainly have been needing it lately, I think. And so, I've done a bit more reading of stuff. I'll talk about that in Dev Thoughts. I played a bit more games. I'll talk about that in Gamer Thoughts. So because of that, my week hasn't been super eventful, kind of on purpose, but
And it sounds like it was much needed based on just the amount of, also, I mean, you've mentioned a lot of personal stuff that was happening, but also you have a lot of work right on top of
right. So I have just been kind of taking a break from some of that work to kind of handle the personal stuff, especially in this last month or so. There has been just an abundance of personal stuff to deal with in my life. So,
yeah, I'm really glad that you're taking that time. And again, just coming from my own burnout and knowing what that feels like, doubly glad. I think I mentioned last podcast, I went on walks on nature. I didn't touch game development. I went on walks on nature. I went and meditated, and that was pretty much it. That's all I did. So I'm really glad that you're taking that time for yourself.
Man, I wish there was some really good nature either nearby or a good way for me to get out to nature. Cause I personally, I also really, really appreciate just sort of untouched natural areas, or at least undeveloped natural areas. Being in them, the sense of wonder and of calm that I feel like I get from the purely or mostly natural world is just unmatched. There are a lot of things I love about living in the city right now. There are certainly some things I love, but I definitely do miss the ability to sort of just escape into the wild, so to speak.
Yeah, I totally hear you. There's that quality of silence in nature that aligns our inner self with that silence. And it's very, very relaxing when we can be with that.
Yeah. And it's very restorative. Like, I mean, I'm going to be like totally honest. I'm sure like other people have experienced this too, but like when spring comes, like my mood just like goes way up because it's like, it's like, oh, now I can like walk around outside again. Now like nature is like blooming again. It's like, oh my God, like just that experience of like life and nature kind of coming back feels just amazing.
My eye sockets don't freeze when I walk outside.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a small part of it, but but it's quite nice too.
Well, good. Again, I'm glad you're taking that time, and it sounds much, much needed.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm hoping like a lot of like the personal stuff I've been dealing with soon will hopefully be at least more resolved soon-ish. I'm going to be going up to see my family next weekend for Easter weekend. And also because my grandpa, he's a veteran. He's doing something called an honor flight that like flies veterans out to Washington to see their war memorials and kind of like get the emotional catharsis that comes with that. And then he'll be like flying back on Saturday next weekend, and we'll all be there at the airport to say hi and greet him. And then, you know, Sunday is Easter. And so I'm going to be with my family then. And because like I have like recently come out to a lot of my family, I expect it to be difficult. To be totally honest, like, I don't think there's any way to get around that, at least from like what I have heard recently with kind of like how my dad and stepmom are like processing it. I think with some family members, it'll be a lot less difficult, but with them especially, I get the sense that it's going to be difficult. And maybe I don't really know how that's going to go. And, you know, just not knowing is part of what makes me anxious, but I have a feeling it could be a very emotionally difficult weekend. And so I'm just kind of like preparing for that. Like I've got to like steel myself to a certain extent.
Sure. It's that calm before the storm, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's like I said, I don't know how bad the storm's going to be, but I have to be able to handle it. And thankfully I've got good friends who will be supportive of me no matter what, but yeah.
Yeah. I hope it goes well for you.
Me too.
No doubt.
Yeah, so I guess that's about everything that I could think to talk of for the catch-up segment. I feel like this podcast is kind of sleepier than normal. Maybe it's just me, but are we ready to pump ourselves up for the next section?
We are. In fact, I'll start our pumping up with Bennett and Now!
Dev Thoughts! Let's get into it.
All right. You mentioned that you've got not a lot for this section. Is that correct?
Yeah.
But you did have that reading that I really want to hear about.
Have you got nothing? Is that why you're doing this, Milo?
No, I'm just really curious about this reading. I have stuff to chat about.
All right. I mean, most of it's just like a generalized sort of like spending more time, like just kind of like paying attention to like what devs are saying and stuff. And some of that spending a lot of time on Twitter, which has its pros and cons. The pro is that like, I feel like I do definitely learn some stuff and hear some interesting thoughts. The con is that like, because of the way that all social media is designed, it's hard to get out of it. And there definitely are diminishing returns to like how much you get out of social media for how much time you spend on it. And, you know, B, often it can be kind of really anxiety inducing just because I feel like at least on Twitter, especially, people talk about the things that are bad in the world a lot. And so just like constantly being reminded of that is not great. But anyway, so I've spent a decent amount of time on that. And I guess like the main thing in my mind as far as like what I've read from lately is I saw people posting about something called Not GDC, and it was a virtual game developers conference that was happening during GDC week, and it was specifically by and for and made of people who aren't at GDC.
Yeah,
and so I thought that's really interesting. Like, well, This is a lot of people who might be viewed as like industry outsiders, you know, like people who are in the industry, but don't have the means or the time or the desire to go to the big conference. And so there was a whole website for it. I'll put it in the show notes and of course send it to Milo. And there's just like a list of talks, like of not GDC talks. Some of them were YouTube videos, some of them were blog posts, some of them were Twitter threads. It was really interesting, like seeing how much more multimedia it was than, you know, the standard format GDC talk of somebody talking at a podium with PowerPoint slides. But
oh, cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. And a lot of the talks are the kind of things that like is scrappier than you usually hear at GDC. Like one of them that I thought was fun and is still an ongoing series, it's not complete, was by a woman named Andy something. I don't remember her last name. I'll find the specific YouTube video and I'll link it. But the talk was basically how to make a passion project with no budget. And it was really interesting because, like, you know, one of the main thesis of it at the beginning was like, hey, this is like unequivocally one of the dumbest things you can do game dev wise is make something you're really passionate about that has a high scope and you have no money. Like just don't do that. You really shouldn't do that. But I know some of you are going to do it anyway. Some of you aren't going to listen to any advice. And so this is for those people who are inevitably going to do it and could probably use some advice for how to do the dumb things. And I thought it was really fun, and also helpful. So yeah, I'll link that and I'll link not GDC as well, but it was cool.
Excellent. I missed that last thing. What'd you say?
I just said it was cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It sounds cool. And also how fun that, like, cause there's so many people that can't come to GDC too. Right. And so to have this sort of community GDC outside of GDC, I think is just wicked. That's so cool.
Yeah. And in addition to that, I know coming up soon-ish, maybe in like a few weeks or a month, something like that, is the GameDev.World conference, which is supposed to be like an international web conference. And that's hosted by Rami Ismail, who's like one of the founders of Lambeer. Because I know one of his sort of core missions is to kind of like open up game dev to more underrepresented people, especially from people who don't live in the West, which is a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But even though those people are traditionally outside of like the West and Japan, they're traditionally not represented in the world of game dev.
It's very, very true. Yeah. And I believe my roommates have actually met Rami and he's kind of amazing.
Yeah, I mean, he seems really cool, at least online, but in the games he's made, like what he's done is really cool. And also just like what he's working on, you know, like both philanthropy wise and just like advocacy and outreach wise is really cool. It's really inspiring and admirable.
Yeah, I love that when anyone can step up to that, it's just amazing.
It is. But yeah, so I'll link that to gamedev.world. But we've got two sort of not conferences that are coming into your show notes this week. It'll be fun.
I have to see if I can check these out. This might be fun to go poke around in and see what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you see like some talks that you're like, oh, that's cool. I want to see it.
Yeah, teach me, sensei.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. Okay, so what are your dev thoughts then, since you made me give mine first?
Sorry? So I'm going to start with, let's see. I'm looking at doing a Where the Ferns Don't Grow redux, essentially, for next year's game teams. I've just built the pitch document for that over the course of, I don't know, 3 hours or something like that, where I restructured the gameplay to be something I think is perhaps more compelling than the original idea's gameplay, which I personally think was compelling, but that was before I knew how to design. And so there's a lot less testing in Where the Ferns Don't Grow than my newer stuff. But in the redone version, I still want to essentially continue my thesis of how do we tell a story where your actions create that story? I want to further that idea with a different mechanic while also working with a team of other sophomore developers, both in design and art and programming, where the programmers also have to build a custom engine. Now, we haven't started the next semester where these projects already start. And so right now for me is the phase more about finding teams and pitching the game idea, as well as over the summer, I'll probably come up with four other ideas just because it's good to have many, many ideas that are fleshed out and possible, seeing as development is tumultuous. But I know that this Where the Ferns Don't Grow is really well scoped for this class. I know it's entirely capable with a team of four programmers and a couple of designers and some artists, and that'll be enough to make this game good in the amount of time that we'll have to make it. And I know that because I built the original in a month by myself and an artist. So
well, yeah, I mean, if you built the original game with like a team of two and a time scale of 1 month, if you scale up that team and scale up the time, obviously you could build it again. And I mean, like, you already have a prototype. So that's really cool. You're already ahead.
Yeah. And what's super cool is that it was built out more than just a prototype was. So it also has the same atmosphere that we're going for. But with a team of like three or four artists, this game could look beautiful.
I would love to see like a stylistically rendered Where the Ferns Don't Grow. That would be so cool.
Right. Yeah. And the thing that's slightly tricky is that this game, the version that I'm pitching is a completely different core mechanic, right? So it flips the core mechanic on its head entirely, which means all the levels and stuff are going to have to be redesigned, which is important because I'm going to be working with designers who need things to do. It wouldn't make sense to just rebuild the game. Plus, there's some major structural issues with the game, and fixing that would just, that would be a mess. So better to start from scratch with the premise and then completely change the core mechanic, and I think I can still keep that story and just change the way that it's told, but keep those like big moments.
Yeah. The moments were wonderful. I definitely would love to see those stick around. As far as what the mechanic is going to be, do you want to like talk about it? Cause I would love to hear.
Yeah. So the new premise is that your buddy is this shape-shifting symbiote that lives on your back, and you can throw your buddy out, and any object that they make contact with, they essentially copy those properties. And then the next time you throw them, they retain those properties, so you can invent new routes through this cave system by finding objects and using them in novel locations. So to paint a picture of what that might look like, say this is sort of, it's done in the same style that exploring caves is sort of done, where you're not really grounded in where you are, and it's just like this sprawling cave system. So imagine that you come across this location that's almost pitch black and you just can't see, so you don't know how to navigate it. You don't know what you need to do in order to get through this room. But imagine that a couple caverns later, you come across a firefly. And so you threw your symbiotic shapeshifter buddy into that firefly and they copy those properties. But because you as the player walk into this room, and you see this firefly glowing in what's essentially a pitch black room, it's gonna create recall in your mind where you remember, oh right, there was that other room where I couldn't see anything. You know, I bet I could take this firefly's power. Then you try it. Then you go back a couple rooms and you throw your buddy in there, and sure enough, you can light up the way. Then you have that moment of like, wow, I'm so smart. And also, it's this really cool mechanic of mixing and matching locations and abilities.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds really cool. That sounds like a combination Metroidvania and Pokemon a little bit. And sure. those are two sort of game styles that I personally love deeply. So that sounds like fun.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, shoot. Now I really hope it gets made so I can play it. And what were you going to say?
I'll send you the pitch document, because I really hope it gets made as well. Again, I'm going to come up with four other ideas because I never expect I can't expect the one idea to get made, though, even if it is a dream mm-hmm. project. We'll see what happens. Also, I don't have a team yet, right? So I'm pitching this to a team right now. But my roommates reminded me that the most important thing is to find a group of people that you're going to work well with, regardless. It's funny. Oh, man, I should have talked about this in catch-up. Can I derail for a second?
You can talk about it now. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm derailing.
Great.
We at DigiPen just had a gigantic meet and greet where all the artists, all the programmers, all the designers, all the people in DigiPen freshman cohort come together in a room and chat about game ideas and forming teams. And the idea is, again, we don't have many opportunities to meet people in cross disciplines, which is a really major drawback. It's really unfortunate. Mm-hmm. And so this is that opportunity, which is also kind of rough for anyone who's an introvert, because that is, man, that would be really hard for anyone that's
right. That your only opportunity is one massive room full of people that you have to sell yourself to. That sounds difficult.
That's a mess. But one of the things that we noted during this, my roommates were commenting on this to me, was that it's really focused on game ideas, which reminds me a lot of the Global Game Jam when we went to that, where it was a very similar setup where people go up and they pitch their game ideas. But that's so much less important than team dynamics, because team dynamics, I think, are a far better predictor of game success than the idea. Because if you have a really good idea and a bunch of people who don't like each other, it's going to go mm-hmm. down in flames. It's just Absolutely. Not going to work.
And anyway, like, the idea is going to change over time with what people add. So you kind of need to sort of like lean into that and embrace that with people who you work well with.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I know for me, this is a bit of a challenge because though I'm very personable, I also keep to myself a whole lot of the time. Just mm-hmm. that's my preference. And so I don't know many programmers. I don't know many artists. I don't know many. I know all the designers, but
right.
So I refuse to come at this from a place of fear. Like I've felt that come up in me. It's like, oh God, I got to find a team. And, you know, the mental freak out and what have you. So I just mm-hmm. watch that and I feel that and I acknowledge that. And then I remind myself that I'm here to remind people, myself included, of the joy and the mystery of being here, of being alive. And so I'm going to let that guide my actions and we'll see what happens. And I mean, worst case, I end up on a pre-built team, because anyone who doesn't end up on a team gets put on a studio team that's managed by one of the staff members of DigiPen, and a really competent, really impressive staff member at DigiPen too. So whatever the case, I'll be on a team.
But, you know, you just want to hope that you find a team full of people you really gel with.
Yes, that would be nice.
Ideally, who would share, like, you know, similar visions.
Yeah. And I don't expect that to happen at my age. It's just my age range is not. This is typically the kind of thing that happens. I see most often in people who are, oh, God, in their 60s and older. It's not common for my age group.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's not to say it's exclusively not in this age group. It's just not common. However, this team that I'm currently pitching, Where the Ferns Don't Grow To, they want to build something that's a little moodier, that's a little darker, and this game totally fits that.
Yeah. Yeah, like, the game is weird. It's definitely weird and dark, and that's one of the things I love the most about it, personally. But... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, fingers crossed.
Yeah. Here's hoping. We'll see what happens. I'll be chatting with who I think is their team leader. I'm not entirely clear on that. I'll be chatting with him next week sometime. I don't know when, but he has the pitch document. I'm sort of just going to go around team member by team member, walking them through my pitch idea and getting feedback. But if I can, like, one by one get the team on board with the idea, then this is going to mm-hmm. be a lot easier than trying to pitch it all at once and then, like, if someone has one concern, then suddenly everyone's going to have that concern. It's just much easier if I walk through it one person at a time.
Right. And, like, you know, it gives you more ability to sort of, like, schmooze them, like, bring them food, make them feel special.
Yes. Yeah. And also to refine the idea. Because every person I talk to can like point out different things. Oh, and here's something fun that I learned about the difference in programmers' approach to games versus like designers' approach to games.
So I'm
a designer. I come from a design background, and I built out this document and play tested it with a couple of designers, and they're like, yeah, this looks really good. It's very evocative. I want to see this game built. And then I play tested it with one of my roommates who's a programmer, and he's like, I still don't get how this is going to work. How's this going to work? How's this going to work? I'm like, oh, okay. They're far more generally technical about like specifically how is this mechanically going to work, right? It's almost this binary. If you were to read a technical manual version of Where the Ferns Don't Grow, is that represented in the pitch document? No, better go fix it.
Right. Well, and for programmers, it is very important because they have to build it. And unfortunately, you can't build on feelings alone. You have to have the concrete technical document version of it in your head, if not, you know, out on paper.
Yeah. It's also a little bit contradictory, right? Because in every game that I've worked on, it never comes out the way it started. Like we'll start with some core idea and either it changes drastically from that, or it just sort of like morphs into some direction we just didn't see it going. It's so even though I need to have that technical precision with the knowledge that the game's not going to finish like that.
Right. Yeah. I know when I go into as a sort of designer programmer hybrid, when I go into like making things, I like to have an idea of how I'm going to implement it technically, but then like be willing to sort of, you know, like sidestep things as I run into maybe technical issues I didn't think about, or just like revamp things as I run into design issues I didn't think about. And of course, and you've talked about this before too, is that just always be getting feedback, like be getting feedback. Because if you were going to make something that's like totally technically sound, but like, isn't evocative in the right way, then like you failed. Mm-hmm. So you kind of got to like make sure you're always iterating, at least for me.
Yeah.
And so, I think like maybe the right way to approach this with the document is with a more general idea that of like how you're going to do it technically. But I mean, maybe not with the document. I think that's the right way that I would want to approach it personally if I was building it. But also I get that some people like really are going to want it super spelled out. But
yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I've done just that, right? So I've play tested it with four people now, and every single time it gets better. So I've got luckily for me, the vision, the evocative part, that comes naturally to me having been in all sorts of creative fields for 10 years already, right? So that's easy for me. that's not hard. The hard part for me is I'm still learning design. So that's the iteration and what have you. Taking that to a level that's truly, truly amazing. And so like getting it technically accurate is like, oh, I just don't think like that. Great. Now I really get to build something that in a way that I don't think about. So I've got a technical document that is still evocative and has pictures. So you can look at the pictures and be like, oh yeah, I understand how this plays.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's helpful.
Yeah.
Like you should just have like two design docs. Like here's the doc for designers. Here's the doc for programmers.
Right.
Like if you're a designer, read this part. If you're a programmer, skip to the next, you know?
Right. I'm curious to chat with artists more now too, just because I don't know how they approach this whole thing yet nearly as much. I think they're going to be a little bit more in alignment with the way that I typically approach things. Just the way that they're taught and also the way that I feel and think, I expect to be somewhat similar, but we'll actually see in the long run.
Yeah. I mean, obviously everybody is different, but in my own personal experience working with artists on small game teams, they tend to think way more visually. So like when I want to like help an artist out, like to kind of try to see something, I find as many different reference images as I can. And usually that's better than like any words I could give them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Just letting them see that and absorb that visually so that they can then go tweak.
Right. Because that's what they deal in. They deal in the visuals. So.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. I have one other thing that I was working on, if we have time for that.
Yeah, no, we totally have time. We really undershot the time on the previous segments. Let's go.
Nice. So we win. The other thing that I've been working on is my online portfolio, which has been really excellent. This was such a blast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, tell me about it.
Right. So I told you I want to apply for Girls Make Games, but I need to have a resume. I need to have a website portfolio type thing. And I was like, shoot, I really need that. And I just need it because this is the field that I'm going into. I just need some way to show all the work that I've been doing. So I finally spent like too many hours yesterday for my poor left arm. But thankfully, it doesn't feel bad today. It actually feels quite nice. So I won't do that again today.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's such an issue when I get so like into a project. It's like I don't want to stop. It's like I need to. My body cannot handle this right now.
Like your spirit is fighting against the physical limits of your body.
Yeah. Unfortunate. Anyways, I use Squarespace. Like I believe you were the one who was telling me about how you use Squarespace. Is that correct?
Yeah. And I, excuse me, part of this is like as a developer, but I think in general, Squarespace is good at getting a certain kind of elegant looking site put together quickly. But I feel like it doesn't offer as much flexibility as I want. So maybe at some point in the future, I'll switch over my portfolio to some other kind of hosting system. But yeah,
I totally hear you on that. My biggest gripe, such a tiny designery thing to be griping with, is that when I view my site in mobile form, the navigational bar at the top doesn't have its own banner, and there doesn't seem to be an option to give it like a white banner or something. So all the pictures and text that when you scroll the website, they just like start overlapping with the top banner area. It's just a mess.
Yeah, I have that issue
too. Such a tiny detail, but
it seems like such an oversight. You know, I have that issue too, both on mobile and desktop. And it's like, why can't I just, you know, give it like a white background? Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a nice thin little white rectangle across the top.
Yeah.
It just fixes that immediately. But nonetheless, I mean, other than that, the difference between mobile and web, it handles it really well, at least for the way that I've got mine set up. So that's really cool.
And I know for mine, like it looks good for the most part on web, but on mobile, it definitely doesn't work as well. Like I've got a big slideshow of images that is like sort of the front page of my portfolio. And you sort of click through the links associated with those images to, see the different portfolio pieces. And, the slideshow has like the links all like as the titles of the games or whatever that I worked on underneath the slideshow picture thing. And on mobile, the picture thing completely overlaps with the words. And I'm like, why are they doing that? You know, why would they think that's good? And there's no way for me to fix it because again, Squarespace does not offer enough flexibility and that annoys me, but
yeah, I hear you on that. The one that I've built is pretty much based on scrolling. So it translates fairly well to
mobile.
To mobile. But that wasn't intentional. I just got lucky. I wasn't thinking about mobile when I was building it. And I don't think most employers would be checking it out on their mobile phone, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
I had heard that you would be surprised. Like often people will just pull it up on their phone and flick through for 30 seconds.
Sure. Okay. Well, color me wrong.
Yeah. At least that's what I've heard.
Yeah. And I mean, that makes sense in our current world, right? Our phone's just right there. It's so easy. So easy.
And it's quick, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, all right, I've got a bunch of stuff to do. I'm curious about this person. Let me just look at their portfolio super quick.
Right. anyways, I was building this, I was building this out, and it was really wacky by the time I finished it. And I still need to do some more testing. I'm going to run it by my mother maybe later today because she's got a lot of experience working with hiring people in a corporate setting. So she's a great person to run this by. But
yeah,
I finished it. And I was like, it was just like this switch turned where I used to just be like, yeah, I've done these projects. I don't really have a lot to show. And then I built this portfolio and I look at it now. I'm like, holy crap, I've got work. I can say like, here's what I've done. Here's what I can do. Here's my skills. And just be like, point.
Right, right. I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast, but I definitely realized this when I was putting a couple more things into my portfolio for GDC, is that like you don't realize how much work you've done until you like actually sit down and put it all in one place. And you're like, oh, wow, okay, I'm kind of impressive.
There it is. There's the proof.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, so that was really fun to finish that up. And also, it's fun having come from a user experience class where we really focused on a lot about like font choice and color theory and navigational flow and margins and what have you, to then immediately get to transfer that and just guide people the way that I want them to go through my web experience. And I expect that a designer would look at this and be like, oh, okay, this guy knows what he's doing.
That's really cool.
So I appreciate the timing of that because it really helped. I think I would have, I wouldn't, had I not had that class before building this, I would not have seen the little details that I was able to add in there, just because I wouldn't know what to look for. But now I do.
Okay. Well, now you've got me hyped up. I want to see your website. I'm curious. But
yeah, absolutely. I got to change a font before I show it to you. But
okay, that's very important. But as established, it is more important than you think.
I believe that is my dev thoughts.
Okay.
Which means
it's time for ba-na-na-na-na.
Gamer thoughts.
Yeah, let's get it going.
Yeah. Yes, I just spent a good chunk of time chatting, so I'd love to hear from you now.
Sure, sure. Yeah, so like I said, I played a bit more games in this last week than I usually would. And I guess the one game in particular I want to talk about is this very recently launched game. Let me see if I can just go to the Steam store page. I think that says what day it came out. Literally April 5th. It launched on April 5th. It's called Supraland. It was in early access for a while before that. And it's billing itself on Steam as a mix between Portal, Zelda, and Metroid. Explore, find secret upgrades, solve puzzles, beat up monsters, find new abilities that help you reach new places. And I have been thoroughly enjoying this game that I feel like just kind of came out of nowhere for me. Basically, like the core premise is it's like a 3D first person exploration slash puzzle solving slash platforming with a light combat focus. There's not a whole lot of combat in the game, kind of game. And like atmosphere wise, it all takes place inside of this kid's sort of outdoor sandbox kind of deal. And you are like a little like tiny red toy person that like fits like well within the palm of the kid's hand. And yeah, like he just like places you in the world, and then you go about and explore and like solve drama between like the little like red people and the blue people. Like, and the story is almost non-existent in the game. Like most of the sort of story and context there is literally is just a vehicle to get you going and exploring more of the world, or like just like little jokes about like little characters you meet. Like there's this one that's like standing inside of like a locked up shed, and he looks like Walter White from Breaking Bad. And he says, oh, I'm not cooking anything in there. And then you get inside, it's all like covered in mist, and like there's like this whole setup. It's like a really good joke. I'm like, this is really goofy. I like it. But yeah. And so like, there's like, it's really cool. I love how like the world is just full of regular objects like erasers and pencils and like hardware that you can tell was used to build these little like miniature towers that exist in the world. But because you're so tiny, everything is massive. Yeah. So like the little miniature towers are like these massive citadels to you. And like, it's really cool. And like, you can like see sort of in the skybox, like these trees in the house that you're nearby, because you're inside a kid's backyard, and you can see the kid kind of like looming over, looking at the playset that you're inside. And I just love the sort of atmosphere of that. And in addition, the exploration of this game, like, it's just, this game has got some phenomenal level design that I just really, really love. And like, phenomenal Metroidvania design in general, in that like, you are constantly sort of, as long as you are exploring, like lots and lots of nooks and crannies, it feels like almost every nook and cranny that you'll explore will reward you in some way. And the reward is always like something good, like coins that you can use to go buy more upgrades, or upgrades that you find in a chest. Like, I feel like this game does a really brave thing design-wise that I don't see a lot in modern games, where they'll have like legitimate like gameplay mechanics that are just locked behind hidden chests. So like there's this one that's like the holy sword, because you have this little wooden like toothpick sized sword that you carry around in the game, and there's an upgrade that you can completely miss that lets you sort of destroy monster spawn points around the map with your sword, and like that's like a full gameplay mechanic, and like many modern games would be way too afraid to just make that a secret, you know. And they've got tons of little tiny secrets like that, and it's just so fun to like pick them up and feel like you're being completely rewarded with like more of the game's features. I love that.
Yeah, new stuff to do, woo.
Right. And like, also just the puzzle. And so like, I love how the worlds are designed to be just crammed with secrets in every nook and cranny, that you can sort of like find unique ways to jump your way to them or make paths that like maybe weren't intended. And then in addition, there's like a whole lot of puzzles to solve. I think that's where the portal aspect of their pitch comes into play. In that there's all sorts of like switches that connect to like different objects and doors in the world, or like even things like floating platforms that you can like toggle their position. And like, you can also spawn these cubes, is one of the upgrades that you get early on in the game, that are really heavy that you can like drop on enemies to hurt them, or that you can like just drop on switches to activate them, or like have them go between different places to like have different effects. Or like, you get a little ray gun at one point that you can like shoot at a certain kind of switch to turn it on or off. And it's really just, I really love how they have like this integrated puzzle design in the world, along with the abilities that you gather that you can use for many different ways for both the puzzles and navigation. It's just a super fun gameplay loop. I just feel like I love exploring that world. And again, like, it's just, I'm sure you never heard of this game, Supraland, before now, and it's just so much fun. And I think it's getting like a decent bit of recognition. Like, it seems to, at least from what I've looked at from the dev's Twitter account, it seems like it was made by one guy, by the way, and so that's even more impressive. But and it's like a 3D game in Unreal Engine 4 that like is like really pretty. Yeah. And it was one guy. Yeah. But it seems to be, at least judging by his Twitter account and what he's been tweeting about it, that the game is definitely seeing some moderate success. And that's really good, because I want him to make more games, because I think he did such a great job with this one.
Sure.
Like, the only thing that I feel like is kind of lackluster is the combat, but you don't do much of that. Like, every once in a while, a little skeleton dude will show up in the environment, and then you got to go whack him with your sword a few times, and then you go back to puzzle solving, and that's about it. Yeah. So,
I'll have to go check it out after we're done here. You've piqued my interest. I just want to see what
he's
doing.
Definitely check it out. And there's a pretty substantial demo associated with it, and I was like, what the heck? I'll play the demo, and I loved it. And I'm like, okay, I need to buy this game.
But success.
Yeah, I did a lot of that the last 2 days, Friday and Saturday. Just so much fun.
Oh man. Wait, does that mean that you ended up with more games?
I bought a new game, yeah.
what was the other one?
Oh, no. I mean this was the new game I bought.
Oh, okay.
That's what I meant.
Got it.
Yeah.
I thought you were on your game buying spree.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting about this is very much sort of like, I mean, it's non-linear structure, but it's a linear progression type of game. It's not like fully open world. It's more Metroidvania. And it was in early access for apparently like a whole year before it was fully released. And so I think that's really interesting. And like, I want to look in, see if I can like research some more of if this guy's talked about like the way he used early access as a Metroidvania game, because normally you don't think of those being like prime candidates for early access. But I found like, you know, at least like one thing on his Twitter account where he mentioned that like, without this early access, I wouldn't have been able to polish the game nearly as much as I did and find like nearly as many like different things pointed out to me by other players. And I mean, obviously I think the end result speaks for itself. I think it's amazing, but yeah, I don't know. I definitely want to look into this more because like after hearing people talk about it at GDC and talking to one of the Subnautica devs about it and seeing his talk on it, which I think is free right now. I'll totally link like the Subnautica postmortem in here because I thought it was an amazing talk. But yeah, just seeing like the different ways people are using early access models is really starting to interest me more.
It's cool too because you get all that feedback, right? And at least as a designer, that's half my job is testing and reacting to feedback.
Right. And like, it makes it so much easier when people are already just playing your game and probably like paying money to play your game, which I feel like solves one of the persistent problems of like developing like static, one and done, buy it and that's it kind of games. Is that like, where's the steady revenue stream? You know, how do you pay for people's rent while they're working on it? And how do you pay for people's rent afterwards if you didn't make a lot of money? Early access, I feel like, is one way to smooth out that revenue a lot more and make it much easier to independently publish.
That's one I'd be curious to see more about, because I know a lot of game when we were at the Glitch doing the internship program, what they showed us on their graphs is that games make their most money right when they're released. And so I'd be curious to see how, if at all, the Steam early access program stuff has affected that, because you essentially release the game before it's done. Is that when all your sales happen? Does it happen when you actually release the game? I can't imagine that would be the case, but I'd be curious to see more info on that.
Actually, no, I think I may have some more info on that after great. GDC. Is the thing is, I mean, yeah, traditionally you get all of your money right away at release, but it seems like that is no longer holding true in like the modern games market, at least from a lot of what I heard at GDC. Like, the curve isn't like it doesn't like start super high and then immediately drop off. It usually builds up over time after release now these days, at least especially with games that are like meant to be played in the long term, like something like a roguelike or just anything in general that would spread more from like word of mouth. Like for some games, definitely it's still like launch day is the day. Like for like a linear narrative experience, like a game by Fulbright or something, like launch day is probably still the day. But if you're making something that's more like just about, you know, the experience of playing it, like that's closer to like a roguelike type system or something that's meant to be replayed in general, like a multiplayer game. Like
if Overwatch was indie, right?
Yeah. But I think those games more and more often, like, it's really just dependent on word of mouth. And the game, like, it's not even that they have a long tail now. It's just that, like, they don't even reach their peak until, like, maybe a month or two into release. And that's even, like, aside from early access, right? Is it seems like with early access still, you definitely get a big spike from, like, finally releasing your game. Because I think part of it is there's a big stigma against early access among gamers. Is they're like, oh, I don't want to play an unfinished game. Like, I'll buy it when it's done. And so a lot of people won't buy it until it's out of early access.
Fascinating.
Right?
Our industry is so fascinating. I'm just curious to see how it keeps changing because we're so young. Our industry
right,
is
we're
going to
see so
it's
much changing.
Yeah.
But yeah, and like I do think it's really interesting how like the way sort of revenue is generated is changing. And, you know, kind of important. Like for me, it's almost like a necessary evil. Like I don't super want to be concerned with the money, but I have to because I have to make enough to survive. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But, yep. It's a necessary factor in our current setup.
Right. But anyways, so really love that game. I want to know more about its development. I have learned a little bit. I'll definitely like link the Steam store page in the show notes so that our like 5 listeners or something might buy the game and support it. Cause I totally want to support this like little indie 1-man team.
Yeah. And I'm of course, right after the podcast, I'm going to go check it out.
Yeah, so, totally.
Congratulations.
Do.
You've supported like I said, with at least one person.
Yeah. And like I said, the demo's free and the demo is awesome. So totally play the demo.
If my hands were up to it, I would.
Yeah, well, I guess that'll be aimed more at the listeners. Listeners, play the demo.
But, yeah, play it for me.
Yeah, have Milo play vicariously through you.
Yeah, right.
Stream it and tell us, and Milo can watch.
My body will be playing in early access mode. and you'll
mental
actually
access.
Be the one playing. It'd be great.
Yeah, so you said you wanted to talk about a thing that happened on JoJo's that you thought was cool, right?
Yeah, so just one specific moment in JoJo Season 3. Is this count a spoiler alert? Yeah, spoiler alert. If you are watching the JoJo series and you have not gotten halfway through Season 3, all the way through Season 3, maybe stop listening. I don't know for how long because I'm bad at estimating time, but just stop listening. Okay.
Sorry. No, that's out there. Just turn off the podcast.
Yeah, just stop it. I'm going to talk about, due to the nature of what I'm interested in, I'm very fascinated in storytelling through mechanics. Due to the nature of what I'm talking about, I have to spoil some stuff. So here it goes. You've been warned.
Okay.
So this is Season 3 of JoJo. They're trying to, it's more of a mystery, and they're trying to track down the serial killer. And they finally back him into a corner and they get so close to getting him, but he just gets away. Now, as they follow him, because he's injured, they're following his blood trail because that's a thing. And they follow his blood trail to this parlor. It's a beauty parlor run by, they all have powers. They all have these unique powers. And her power is to take body parts and or faces off of people and replace them with versions or of those parts of them that allow them to find to have like incredible luck with love. Okay, so she can like
specific.
Yeah. So she removes your face, puts a new face on you, and then you're pretty much guaranteed to run into the love of your life for the next 24 hours or so, and you keep seeing her and stuff happens. Okay, so that's her power. Now they go to this parlor and. She has, they go in and they find her dying on the floor, blood trail leading out the back door. And there's a guy slumped over on the desk nearby. And they're like, oh, okay, good. She got the serial killer. And then they look at the dude and like, oh no, that's not him. That's just a guy. And they realize, crap, he got away. Not only did he get away, the dying girl with the power speaks up and says that she was forced to give him a new face. So he got away and they have no idea what he looks like. Completely different guy now.
Really?
Okay. So this just completely resets our hero's adventure because they were super close and then nope, he got away. Now we as the audience get to know where he is and who he is. And it turns out that he's now with this, this family, with this kid who's not very talkative, very intelligent kid, got some weird habits, and the new life that he's leading is with this person's wife like they've got a really rough relationship. They really don't love each other, and it's just kind of a mess and what have you. But so of course he's using this person's body that isn't his own. And so he still brings his own personal habits, and in an anime style, the wife falls for him and what have you. And suddenly she's like, wow, my husband is amazing all of a sudden. What happened? But whatever, I love him. But that's all good and dandy. So I just spent a bunch of time talking about what happened. Mm-hmm. But the part that really amazes me and that I think was masterful and heartbreaking was I thought back to the guy in that parlor, and I realized when I saw the relationship between the serial killer and who is now inhabiting this dude's body and this dude's wife, was that they didn't love each other, right? Or rather, he loved her and desperately wanted her to love him. And I know this because where does this guy die? At the beauty parlor. He's trying to get a face that will make his wife love him again. And I was just like, holy God, that was an amazing moment of storytelling. But they don't point it out. It's just there for you to read into if you catch it. Beautiful, beautiful subtext, beautiful setup. No one mentions anything about it throughout the series. But I just saw that moment and I was floored and utterly amazed with that moment. So good.
Wow. Yeah, that does sound pretty powerful and like kind of sad. You know?
Very sad.
It is sad.
And, yeah. And it was such a good moment that I was just awestruck in that they didn't bring any attention to it whatsoever.
Right. Especially for
that
anime.
That makes it even more powerful.
Like anime usually isn't very subtle.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. But this was, yeah, masterful. That's my gamer thought for the day.
That's fair. That is really cool though. It does sound cool. I'm surprised to hear about like a powerful and sad moment like that in like kind of down to earth, almost in a weird way, moment like that coming out of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure of all things. But
right, where
cool.
People have the powers to unzip surfaces and people.
Right.
It's like, what?
Or like, have you gotten to the one yet where there's the villain who puts an electrical socket on a rock in the middle of a desert,
yes,
and when you touch it, you become magnetic. Oh my God. That was so ridiculous. I've seen that episode.
Yeah. Or there's one guy that has the power. I don't remember the power's name, but it's essentially a tiny army of little army men and helicopters and stuff. And essentially the entire episode is just a retelling of Stephen King's story where toy soldiers come to life and kill a dude.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Well, cool.
Shall this be the end? Let's turn to our community then.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It shall be the end. Okay. So our email is atale2gamedevs@gmail.com. No spaces or special characters or capital letters, all lowercase, exactly what you would expect it to be. You can send any feedback, any thoughts, any suggestions, any games you want us to play, or anything you'd like us to see us do or talk about to that email inbox, and we would love to talk about it on the show. If you would like us to, like, you know, keep your name confidential or not talk about your email on the show, but you just want to let us know something, then we'll totally respect that. Just make sure to tell us that in the email. You can also DM us on Twitter. Our handle is @2gamedevs. We'll put a link to the Twitter in the show notes. And you can also follow our Twitter for updates whenever we release new episodes. And sometime in several months, we will stream Fallout 76, by God. As long as Milo eventually gets better, we'll stream it. So we'll announce that on the Twitter. So you got to follow now to make sure you don't miss out.
Yeah, months and months from now, you need to be there.
Right. It's going to be so good, you guys. You need to be there.
Fallout 5 comes out. All right, we're ready to do 76.
Right. We'll get to Fallout just in time for it to be outdated.
Yeah.
Well, anywho, I think that wraps everything up, does it not?
Yeah. Time for a bow.
All right. I will make my voice the bow that wraps this episode. This has been A Tale of Two Game Devs, a podcast about two friends who aren't video game industry veterans,
but want to be.
We'll talk to you next time.